A podcast of the cinema.
Hello, what's your name?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi, and you are Dave White.
What do we do?
We're film critics.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
It's
when it's not 2020.
I mean,
we're still film critics.
It's what it says on our tax form.
What else about this show should new people know?
We are espoused.
Also that. And eventually we get to the movies.
We do. Patience.
I have to talk to you, though.
Mm-hmm.
We only have two movies to talk about this week. Well,
three.
I have three. You watched three. I couldn't. Yeah. Anyway. That banana bread is all right.
Yes.
I made banana bread this morning.
I don't know why you felt like you had to beat yourself up about it.
I woke up. No. You don't get it. You don't. You just don't,
I just don't get it,
do you?
What don't I get?
I can tell a movie stinks if someone says that to someone else in the middle of the movie. You just don't get it, do you?
You know what? I have to.
We've got company.
I was going to say, I have to be forgiving about a lot of lines in movies. We've got company being one of them. It's like if that were an automatic, you know,
right.
Cancel, then forget it. You know. What would that
you
leave?
You just don't get it,
just don't
do you?
Get it, do you?
That's almost an automatic cancel for me. Because
mm-hmm.
when I hear it, I think, oh, was this a first draft that went to to the cameras? Is that what you did?
Did you let the actors come up with their own lines?
Yeah, like, the, no, you don't understand the soul of a baker.
Okay. Elucidate.
First of all, banana bread is weird.
Mm-hmm.
It takes 3 hours to bake, practically. It takes less than that, obviously. But it takes a long time to bake because it's a heavy, dense situation. It's not a light, fluffy cake.
No, it's wet.
It's thick.
Yeah.
And so...
Honey, you're thick.
And because of that, it can easily get too brown and crispy on the outside and
still
then
be a
stay,
goo ball in the middle.
Stay gooey in the middle.
Mm.
And so there's that dance with it. Also, you have to really learn how to pump up the banana flavor or else it doesn't taste like a whole bunch.
Right.
So the sugars have to be just right. Like, you're going to use all white sugar, all brown sugar, a mix. You're going to, you know, how many bananas are in there? How ripe are the bananas? Mm-hmm. Like, if they're not, if the peels aren't black
right
on the outside, then get out of here. You're going to have a limited banana flavor.
Gotcha.
My secret weapon is a... half a teaspoon-ish of banana extract that goes in. I made the Chrissy Teigen banana bread once that uses Jell-O instant pudding in the mix, which admittedly was very nice, but also insanely sweet.
Mm.
So, you know, it's like there's no one true banana bread recipe.
The one true banana bread.
The one with Nutella is great.
Yeah.
You were asking specifically for walnuts in this one.
This is a conversation we've had on Linoleum Knife and Fork, one of our Patreon shows.
And the thing about that is that, like, if I'm going to do that, it's not my first choice, but if I'm going to do that, I don't want the teeny tiny little chop, 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 chop walnuts.
Yeah.
Like peppering the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I want a good chunk.
Okay.
Of a walnut. Because the little tiny chopped up walnuts, they get stuck in your mouth.
Mm.
30 minutes after you eat the banana bread, you're like, oh, look, there's a piece of walnut.
Yeah, it's
been
souvenir.
In my teeth this whole time. I'm a disgusting animal. And then, so I just threw in the big walnut halves.
Ooh.
Into this one.
Bold.
I gotta say, yeah, no, it's actually, you know what? This is how I'm gonna do it from now on.
Okay.
This is how I can enjoy a walnut laced banana bread.
Mister, here's a half walnut.
It's been dosed with walnuts. Mm. But so anyway, my worry about whether this was going to work well this morning or not, because like I say, every one of them is a new adventure.
Right.
It came out really well.
Bravo.
Pretty proud of it. I just ate a big chunk.
Yeah.
You're going to have to pause the microphone at least two times for me to burp.
Great.
Yeah.
Glad we could share that.
Oh, we've already talked about that once before. Mm. This microphone gets paused. This recording, listen, we don't edit after the fact.
No.
That's something that you should know. Do you have a podcast? Why are you wasting your time editing when you could
edit in computer?
When you could edit in the mic. Do you feel like you're about to burp because you just ate a big chunk of banana bread? It happens to me all day long. Just stop that mic.
Do you start a sentence with a thought and then lose it somewhere midway through and have to stop and regroup?
Yes.
Pause. Go back. At least, cut the part where you sound stupid.
At least once an episode. So anyway, if there were a compilation of just me belching over the past 10 years, it would last like as long as Satan Tango.
Well, I haven't been saving them, I hate to tell you.
No, I know you haven't. You won't even save our really great mic checks.
Yeah, that's a personal
those
time
are great.
For you and
our
me.
Mic checks are good, and you should save them so that we can compilate them for some time in the future. I'm going to convince you of this.
They're not for others, they're for us.
Sure. That's your line.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's your line in the sand.
My Maginot line.
Yeah. Let's talk about, since we only have three movies to talk about this week, let's talk about the news of cinema.
Yes. We lost Olivia de Havilland this week.
Yes.
At 104, she just celebrated her birthday.
You didn't want to cross her.
Uh-uh.
She kept it going.
She,
all the way to the end.
Oh, yeah.
She died in the middle of a lawsuit.
She was suing Ryan Murphy after turning 100. My hat is doffed to you, madam.
Did she ever sue her own sister, or did they just fight their entire lives?
I don't know if there was actually legal action, but yeah, she and Joan Fontaine were constantly at loggerheads.
But she was cool. That Olivia de Havilland.
She was.
She was pretty great.
She is. I think, we get kind of gooey about the golden age of Hollywood.
Right.
And, you know, like, look, like anything else, they made great movies that will live forever, and they made
crap movies that will not live forever.
Yeah. And there were people who were very famous for a short amount of time and turned out to not be very interesting, and you never heard about them again. And then there were the people who, you know, endured and endure to this day. Like, we still go back to their performances and go, wow, because they really had something and they knew what they were doing. And de Havilland, you know, just had a really fascinating career in that, you know, yeah, everybody thinks of her as like Melanie and Gone with the Wind.
Right.
And I think the easy read on that character is that she's like a doormat, but she's actually, you know, she is a steel magnolia. And a lot of de Havilland's characters, I think, were sort of women who, you know, people might have made the mistake of trying to take advantage of them or think they were going to be soft and pliable and then to get the blade. Like, have you seen The Heiress?
Yeah, I've never seen The Heiress.
Oh, Dave White, we got to watch The Heiress.
All right.
She's so good in that. I bet you, like, when TCM announces their day of Olivia de Havilland, which I'm sure they've had locked and loaded since 2012, you know,
right.
That's got to be one of them because she's so great in that. I'm going to go ahead and give my DVD pick this week.
Oh.
Why not?
Get it together.
Yeah.
Fast, quick.
We,
everybody get out your little pencils and write this down.
It's in the show notes. People don't think of De Havilland.
Some people have little pencils.
Okay, great.
I have a cup full of them.
I know you do.
I use them all the time.
Yes.
I love pencils so much.
You got pencils that require their own special kind of sharpener. That's how into this you are. Anyway, she doesn't get a lot of credit as a comic actress, but she was very good at that as well. And the movie I want to recommend, if people haven't seen it, is The Strawberry Blonde, which is a movie with her and James Cagney and Rita Hayworth. And basically the movie is about, like, she plays a suffragist. By the way, today is the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment.
Yep.
So all the more relevant there. She plays a suffragist. She pursues James Cagney's character. Like, she is very actively, like, flirting with him and taking what, you know, because as I said, at the turn of the century, obviously, you know, the sort of what would be considered the male role of being the aggressor in a romantic relationship.
So she's Gail on Letterkenny.
Yes. In a way, yes. A production code version of that. And, you know, and it's basically about Cagney sort of being besotten with Rita Hayworth, but then finally having to realize that he has got a good thing going with Olivia de Havilland.
Right.
It's lovely, and people should see it.
R.I.P. Olivia de Havilland.
Yes.
In other news, we both posted the same thing on Twitter at the same time yesterday.
Yes.
About Regal saying they were going to open their theaters in August.
Yes, so they could be ready for Tenet.
Matt Seitz had said something so funny this morning. He goes, what if the constant release and reschedule and re-release and reschedule and tease and reschedule is Tenet?
Exactly. I love that idea. Because I, frankly, like, I'm starting to think now, is this movie going to kill people? Like, they have been teasing this movie out for so long,
yeah.
and they keep pinning the reopening of American theaters to this one movie.
Right.
Everything else has, like, run out of its way. Like, nope, 2021, nope, indefinite, we don't know when we're opening it. But Tenet won't go away.
Right.
And it's become
It won't sit still and behave and be patient.
Exactly.
When it could very well do that.
Sure.
With very little...
Push it back.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I get it. Christopher Nolan is very like, you're not going to stream my movie. It has to be seen in the theater the way God and I intended. Fine.
Then
but, you know, wait. But if you keep dangling it, and now it's become a thing where you're going to have theater chains opening prematurely simply because they want to be able to screen this one movie... Like Warner Brothers, Nolan, the theater chains, somebody needs to step up and go, you know what? Let's stop. Let's just take a breath here and realize that we're not ready for any of this yet.
Right.
So yeah, I find it's very frustrating.
When I posted it on Twitter, my comment on the post was the answer is still no.
Right.
For me.
Yeah.
And then folks started sort of debating this back and forth, uh-huh. and then they started, like, kind of being, I don't know, they were sort of getting into it, and then I thought, I get exhausted quickly when people start fighting on Twitter.
Remind me to show you the mute this conversation option on Twitter.
I get tagged.
I find it very handy.
And it's all people who follow me, so, you know, I like them. You know, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, you're nice. You know, like, and then they're kind of getting into it with each other, and I think, but I don't want to be tagged. Like,
right,
I just deleted the tweet because it's exhausting.
If you select mute this
it's very stressful.
You don't have to see any of this.
It's very stressful. I see all these notifications on my Twitter, and I'm like, oh no, people are fighting.
You won't
get all stressed out.
Not
them, me. I'm the one that gets stressed out.
Sure, no, I know, I know.
I don't blame anybody. They can fight all day if they want.
Right, well, that's... Mute this conversation. But anyway,
You'll show me how to do that.
Mine did not erupt into a battle.
It wasn't a battle. It wasn't an eruption. It was just, I could feel people getting testy with each other, and I thought...
You have a low threshold.
Nope. That, yes.
I just put, you're nobody until they name a cluster after you.
I just, yeah.
Like, look...
This is why I only tweet about cakes.
Do we love... The cinema, yes, we do. Do we love going to theaters and seeing films projected? Yes, we do.
Right.
are we going to do that at a, you know, are we going to wait and do that until we feel like it's actually safe to do it? Yes, we are.
Forever.
Yeah. Whatever it takes, whatever it seems like a realistic thing of genuinely.
I would sooner never go into a movie theater again than die from doing it.
Well, if those are the choices, yes.
Yes.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a real rethinking going on about anything that involves congregation.
Yeah,
you know,
everybody stay away from me.
Be that movies. You know,
I got one
theater.
I got one man who gets to get up on this. That's it. The rest of y'all, back up.
6 feet.
Back up. Oh, not six. Minimum 10.
Well,
preferably about 15. That's the length of our balcony. That's how far apart it is when our recent list past week friend came over to sit on the balcony while wearing a mask.
Yes. But you're not going to get
15 feet away.
You're not going to get 15 feet at the post office.
Well, guess who ain't been going to the post office lately?
But you can get.
This is freaking me out because Los Angeles numbers don't go down.
I know.
And it's got me like,
sometimes the post office won't even give you six.
Yeah. Everybody back up.
Yeah.
I realize the power of my beauty. But you can't touch.
That's right. You may look.
Or even get close right now. Not happening. Hey, do me a favor.
Mm-hmm.
The garbage trucks are coming by. You close that window behind you because it's going to be all wild if you don't. We're going to have lots of grindy gears and hydraulic mechanisms. And yeah. Thank you. Have you never listened to this show before? We're at a dining room table. This is not a studio.
But as longtime listeners have said, it's a podcast. Never apologize for audio.
Yeah, I know. I'm not doing it. I'm just trying to help it as long as best we can.
Absolutely.
We did watch some films.
We did.
Let's start with the one that you watched and I didn't bother with because I think I was right.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. Dave Franco's The Rental, which was the number one movie in the country over the weekend.
Was it?
With like $700,000.
Okay, cool. So wait a second.
Nobody ever releases streaming numbers. This is like what it made at like drive-ins, basically.
Oh, so they're not releasing the amount of money it made people downloading
nobody
it.
Nobody ever does. That,
how do you know what's happening?
Well, that's
in
the thing.
World,
that's another part of our changing world is what do box office reports mean when
they won't tell you what the box office
when Netflix won't give you numbers about viewers that are independently corroborated and when, you know, we don't know about
and
streaming
Amazon
numbers.
Won't tell you what money they made off of the thing. Well, where is this movie showing?
Like Amazon and iTunes.
iTunes. And no one will talk about the amount of money that film made in the streaming world.
I don't think anybody releases any kind of realistic numbers for those now.
Do you think they're waiting for a big thing? Here's what I bet they're going to wait. I bet.
Mm-hmm.
I bet Disney Plus releases their Beyonce numbers after this coming weekend.
I mean, you get them occasionally. I think they probably release their Hamilton numbers, and Netflix will do
something. I think if something's high profile, then they're going to tell you, look how many people watched this thing.
But here's
the
thing. A, those numbers include people who watched 2 minutes. And B, there's no way to like fact check them.
The only person who watches 2 minutes of the Beyonce anything is Kid Rock.
Nonetheless, I'm just saying, if it's somebody who turns something on for 2 minutes and go, and then like, you know, their kettle goes off and they never come back to it or whatever reason, that still counts as a view.
My kettle going off is merely the signal that it's time to get cozy with the thing I'm watching.
I understand that. I was just coming up with a random example of why someone might watch something for 2 minutes.
Okay.
So anyway.
You watched The Rental.
I watched The Rental.
Not that band of the 90s that Maya Rudolph was in.
She was in a band called The Rentals?
The Rentals. It was a Weezer offshoot, if I'm not mistaken.
I missed that.
She was in them.
Okay. This is a thriller, I guess, is the category for it. I mean, it's not really a horror movie. It is a little bit, but barely. So essentially, you have two couples. Dan Stevens and Alison Brie, and then Jeremy Allen White and Sheila Vand. Sheila Vand was the titular girl who walked home alone at night. She was the mom in We the Animals.
Yeah.
You saw We the Animals, right?
Did I?
The three brothers growing up.
And, maybe.
Oh, it's really beautiful.
I don't remember anything.
Anyway, Dan Stevens and Jeremy Allen White are brothers. Dan Stevens and Sheila Vand are like business partners. And so there's all these sort of weird intertwiny things going on. And the four of them go to this like gorgeous rental property on the Oregon coast that they have rented for the weekend. And, you know, they sort of throw out all these possibilities of where the drama is going to come from. Like, are Dan Stevens and Sheila Vand secretly doing it? When Sheila Vand tries to book the house, they tell her it's not available. But then when Dan Stevens tries to rent it an hour later, it is available. So are they renting a house from a racist, you know?
Oh, because she's Muslim.
She's Middle Eastern, yeah. Yeah. You know, the one night, three of the four of them, like, drop Molly and go to the hot tub and dance around like white people. You know, and then things start happening. And, I mean, it's fine. This is Dave Franco's directorial debut. He wrote it with Joe Swanberg. And, you know, it does have that Joe Swanberg kind of, like, low stakes, you know, very conversational, very like, you know,
yeah,
down to earth naturalism.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really go anywhere, you know, and I feel like I've seen versions of this movie recently that are a lot more interesting. Like, you know, this is not nearly as taut or as provocative as The Invitation, for example.
Right.
Karen Kusama's film.
Right.
Or, I don't know, like, you know, there's all, you know, it's not even, this is the second, like, Airbnb horror movie of the summer. Everybody's already forgotten You Should Have Left. But that was another one of people who go to a house and things are happening in that house. What's going on with the house, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I like, you could have very easily made this a sort of Virginia Woolfish, like, you know, two couples in a house and, you know, they have an emotional meltdown or something. But when they kind of go the thriller route, it's not that interesting. I was not into this movie. I don't know why people are going bananas about it. I mean, like, even as sort of directorial debuts from actors, I've seen a lot better ones. You know, like, it is competently made. Like, Franco knows where to put the camera. He's put together a good crew of, you know, the people that worked on the movie. You know, the performances are good. Toby Huss plays the guy they rent the house from, and you don't know what his deal is half the time.
Right.
And, I mean, it's not terrible. It's just not special.
Thriller or horror?
I'm not enough of a genre specialist to sort of know where to parse the differences. There, you know,
is someone trying to murder everybody?
At some point, yes.
Okay, horror movie.
Well, I don't know if it's that simple, though. I mean, there are horror elements. I think it's mainly a thriller, but there are horror elements. And then there's a whole sort of, like, kind of twist and coda that don't add anything.
Right.
Like, you know, in fact, Whitney Seibold from Critically Acclaimed had an interesting tweet where he said, like, the idea of this movie seems to be to take the teenage tropes of slasher movies and turn them into adults. He goes, which is an interesting idea, and then the movie doesn't do anything with it.
Hmm.
So yeah, I don't get what the big deal about the rental is. It's fine.
Are you an outlier with your opinion about it?
Somewhat. I mean, I'm not alone out here, but I've seen there were a lot of really gushy reviews.
Really?
And of course, part of the as with everything, there's the, you know, there's the wave of opinion, and then there's the, you know, like, I'm losing my words now. Not flashback. What's the word I want? The response.
Backlash.
Yeah. Thank you. The backlash to the initial wave of opinion. So first there were all these gushy reviews, and then you start seeing people on film Twitter who were like, what is the, who, well, who cares? Why is this a thing? You know, suggestions that people, that critics are being nicer because of the pandemic, that basically, like, we're so starved for entertainment at home that we're giving movies passes that they don't deserve. Like, I don't know. But yeah, I had high hopes, and it's kind of whatever.
Well, you know, if someone whose opinion I really respect says it's, you know, amazing, I might eventually get around to it.
Do you respect my opinion?
I do, but you just said it was eh. So if someone disagrees with you whose opinion I respect as much,
if not more,
mm-hmm.
Fine.
Then,
oh, fine.
Then maybe I'll get around to it eventually.
Fine.
But it might take a while because I'm very busy. I'm making banana breads.
Absolutely.
On the reg.
They're time consuming.
Well, breakfast sandwiches. I made those this morning too.
You did.
Who's taking care of you during this pandemic?
You're taking very good care
of me. Who? Hoopst.
You
are. Constant affirmations.
¿Cómo te ha salido?
Radioactive.
Yes.
Radioactive is a film from Marjane Satrapi.
Mm-hmm.
She made Persepolis.
Yes.
And
The Voices, which we need
to
watch.
The Voices, which I never got around to.
Because I know Bibbs is a big fan.
Yeah. And it is about Marie Curie.
Yes.
Stars Rosamund Pike. It also stars Sam Riley, mm-hmm. who was Ian Curtis in the film Control.
It's funny. There's a joke in Martin Amis wrote this novel called Money about essentially about the making of Saturn III, which he wrote.
Yeah.
And there's a character in the novel who is intended to be the stand-in for Kirk Douglas.
Yeah.
And there's a line that's something along the lines of, like, you know, he played everybody from Picasso to Spider-Man.
Yes.
And, like, the idea that Sam Riley has now played Ian Curtis, basically, he's played Dean Cassidy or whatever, the, you know, Jack Kerouac's friend.
Okay,
In the On the Road movie, and now Pierre Curie.
Yeah, look, you're an actor.
Yeah,
you're gonna do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna put on that late 18th century
mustache.
19th century. Half late 19th century. Professory facial hair.
Mm-hmm.
It's all pointy.
Yes.
Like the Smiths Brothers cough drops box. You're going to get out there, you're going to act it up.
Yeah.
So, this is a biopic.
Yes, however, yes and no.
However, it is not the kind of biopic where, you know, you see the person as a child in that one key moment where it all, where the road just lays itself out in front of them happens. There is maybe one or two flashbacks to her childhood.
Yeah.
But primarily we are focused on Marie Curie and Pierre Curie working together to discover radium, basically.
Well,
and...
Go ahead.
Yes.
Well, I mean, the what's surprising about this movie is that...
Are you going to go where I'm about to go?
Then go ahead.
Okay. They do this in the first 30 minutes.
Yes.
And then all this other stuff happens that you didn't know about Marie Curie's life, such as... creeping on another woman's husband.
Mm. Scandal.
You know... winning Nobel Prizes. I mean, you did know that. But, you know, taking a professor position and still being the subject of controversy all the time because she did not suffer fools.
No.
Or anyone, really, according to this film.
And she committed the high crime of not being French.
She was Polish and not French. And so the French kept on hating her for that. So there's a lot of... or not a lot of, but there is a certain amount of
xenophobia
commentary about xenophobia and anti-immigrant sentiment, as well as, you know, garden variety and specific to her, types of misogyny. And it's kind of about how she just kept rolling on and pushing people out of her way.
Yeah.
Without much distress over it. You could see the distress in Rosamund Pike's face, but as a character, this Marie Curie is
indefatigable.
And who are you to me? Like, inwardly, she's conflicted about, you know, things, and she's upset about stuff. Her husband dies early on, and she sees him everywhere she goes. That was actually sort of the most moving visual element of the film. There's also a certain amount of, is the word fantasy that I'm looking for?
What the film does that I think is a really bold move for a biopic, but for any movie, is that, like you said, they discover radium in the first 30 minutes. So the rest of the movie is not only about sort of her later life and these controversies and scandals, but also the film kind of encompasses the grander idea of, like, what hath Marie Curie wrought, basically. And so what does radioactivity and the discovery of, what do her discoveries mean in the world beyond her life? So you flash forward to the A-bomb being dropped on Hiroshima. You flash forward to cancer patients being treated with radiation. You flash forward to Chernobyl. And that sort of weaves in and out of the narrative of her life. So, like, at one point she tries to go to this spiritualist to contact her dead husband after she had been completely dismissive of the idea of spiritualists before. And she just finally, like, breaks down about the loss of Pierre. And then her wailing sort of becomes a siren as this fire truck goes by, and it's a fire truck going to the Chernobyl site.
You know?
So they kind of weave future history into this story, which I think is a great idea, and I think it works more than it doesn't work in this movie.
So what I was getting at when I said it incorporates elements of fantasy is the imaginings of her own head.
Mm.
You know, the fire dancer becoming an ongoing motif in her life, and
true,
her thinking about that. She sees a performance by a woman who does a modern abstract dance
Loey
that she calls
Ford.
Her fire dance.
Have you ever seen the footage of that?
No, I have not.
Whenever you see, like, you know, in things like Precious Images or things that are sort of about the dawn of cinema, you see there is footage of her, the actual dancer doing that actual dance. So this woman is dancing with these, like, whites, the big white sort of
like
sheets.
Like a cape, almost.
Yeah, but, like, she's got poles in her hands, so she can sort of manipulate around her. And then she was filmed, and they would hand tint it, you know, to be different colors, because when she performed, they would have different color lights on her. And so I thought the inclusion of that in the film both played into the whole notion of their scientific breakthroughs, but also as kind of a nod to cinema itself.
We paused. Excuse me. We paused the microphone so that I could go look at the thing, and I had seen it before. I just didn't know that was the person that we were talking about in the film. Anyway, I thought that worked, particularly, like I said, when she sees Pierre in random places after his death.
Where she imagines, like, six fire dancers, like, carrying his casket.
Yeah. The part you're talking about, or rather the sort of drop-ins of flash-forwards to the future, I didn't care for those at all.
Really?
Yeah, I felt like they interrupted interrupted things.
That's what Chrissy said, and you're both wrong.
It made me think, well, you know, I weren't no science major, but I do know that radiation therapy is used for cancer patients, and I do know that the United States tested atomic bombs in the desert in New Mexico, and I do know that Chernobyl happened. So I don't personally, maybe some people do, but I don't personally need, Alonzo, maybe you need it to be to be taught these things by the film, but I did not.
Do you
I'm
think,
very smart.
Do you think that Marjane Satrapi thinks that anybody needs to be told those things? Do you think that the makers of this film think that anybody watching this film beyond the fourth grade doesn't know these things?
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
I thought it was...
I just structurally, it didn't. It felt weird to me and felt like, can we just go back to Marie Curie? I know all this stuff.
I thought it was an interesting sort of way to explore the legacy of any kind of scientific breakthrough. That right. There's good aspects of it and there's bad aspects of it. And frankly, I think that the biopic as a genre is so ossified that I welcome any shakeups.
I see your point.
Like, I mean, remember Get On Up?
Yeah.
You know, I loved how that movie kind of it makes you originally think, oh, brother, is this going to be another music biopic that never saw Walk Hard? And then like, no, we're not doing that. We're going to jump around and we're going to like make connections and we're going to like keep you guessing as to where and when we are. You know, so I just think anything that's going to save it from being like, and this happened and then this and then this and then this. She won the day. Hooray.
I get it. It mostly works. And I think, and I do appreciate that they don't neglect her emotional life.
Well, yeah.
Because so often, I think sometimes in the pursuit of, you know, giving you a story of a woman that was not going to be turned around by anybody, that will often get neglected.
Sure.
And for fear of making her look too soft or so, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's...
You negate her humanity because you need to make her heroic or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah, and so I appreciated that quite a bit.
Did you know about her World War I stuff? I did not.
I did not know about the World War I stuff, and that was fascinating. Like, she was given x-rays to fallen soldiers.
On the battlefield
with her daughter, who was also a scientist.
Yeah, who later won a Nobel Prize herself, to prevent unnecessary amputations because... As she put it, because you're cutting off legs for people who have sprained ankles.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, I just, I don't know. I learned a lot about her. I thought the flash forward stuff was interesting. I really hadn't seen a movie before that kind of does that. That you know, usually that's the sort of thing you get the title cards at the end, you know. Radiation is now used to cure cancer, but it was also used in Chernobyl, you know, like I thought actually dramatizing that made it more potent.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Mostly liked it.
Okay.
Yeah. And Rosamund Pike is great.
Always so great.
She's
one of those people that she would have like a thankless supporting role in a movie. And I'd be like, who's she?
Well, that's where I first saw her as a supporting player in...
An Education?
Pride and Prejudice.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
And I thought, oh, no, I like her. Who's she?
Yeah. An Education and Maid in Dagenham. Remember that one?
I don't think I ever saw that.
That was, I think it was Sally Hawkins.
I know which one you're talking about.
The women who go on strike at like an automotive plant in the UK for equal pay. And Rosamund Pike plays like the wife of one of the execs of the plant. And she winds up siding with the female employees. Yeah, like she, I think she's extraordinary, and I don't, why isn't she more famous?
Well, you know, she's in Gone Girl.
She is, and she well-deserved Academy Award nomination, but like, I don't know, I feel like people, her name is not, it doesn't come up enough when people are talking about like this generation's best, this best actors, you know. But yeah, she's terrific in this.
She'll be around.
She will.
Doing things.
Like Olivia de Havilland, she will endure.
Pretty much. I'm guessing you're right.
I think so. We also saw Yes, God, Yes.
Please talk about that because you are Catholic and I am not. And go on.
So, yeah, this is about a young Catholic girl played by Natalia Dyer from Stranger Things. She's a high schooler. She is starting to explore her own sexuality, and it is the turn of the 21st century. So, of course, she's doing a lot of that on AOL in chat rooms. But she is attending a Catholic school where they are very strictly, you know, like the health ed class is taught by a priest who tells them all that sex is reserved for marriage and procreation.
And you should never, ever
masturbate.
Correct.
So the cool kids at her church start going off on these weekend retreats. So she and her friend decide they're going to do this. So they go to this school sponsored weekend retreat. That's all about, you know, getting you closer to Jesus. And over the course of that weekend, she makes a lot of discoveries, mainly about sexual hypocrisy among both her peers and her teachers, and kind of, you know, liberates herself in a sense. It's a great idea for a movie. It's a great concept. It's a great message. Is that a great movie? It doesn't hold together. It's not, you keep it, it felt like an expanded short, and it actually was a short originally, but mainly sort of a proof of concept for making the feature.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, I think a short film, you are willing to forgive not getting like super deep characterization or plotting or whatever, because a short is usually about like an incident, and you sort of like, you set it up, it happens, it's out. And this movie always kind of feels like it hasn't quite gotten to where it's going, or it hasn't really kicked in yet, and then it's done.
Yeah, its running time is, what, like 80 minutes?
Yeah.
It's pretty short. 78 minutes.
Yeah.
Actually.
And that's including credits.
And
there's nothing wrong with being short if you make your most of the time.
There's a lot of dead air in this film that I think was meant to be moments of silence for characters to be seen contemplating who they are and what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't play that way. It just plays like dead air.
Mm.
It's from director-writer Karen Main, who co-wrote
Obvious Child.
Obvious Child. And I thought Obvious Child was really funny, and this was sold to me as a comedy. So after 30 minutes, when I had barely laughed at all, I thought, wait a second, I was told this was a comedy. Turns out I was sold the wrong thing. It's a dramedy. Primarily a film of serious intent with some, you know,
humor.
Situational humor that comes along with the stuff that's going on in the film.
Now, okay, you say it was sold to you as a comedy. Had it been sold to you as a dramedy, would you have liked it any better?
No, because it's not all that dramatically interesting either.
Yeah.
I feel almost exactly the same way that you feel about this, because is there a need in the world for film, television, anything that tells teenage girls, hell, teenage boys, that sex is good? And there is a place for it, and there's a healthy way to understand it and learn about it and grow into it as you, you know, become an adult. That masturbation is healthy and vital for your well-being, and that
repression is
and that
bad.
Repression, repressing all of that stuff is going to harm you in the long run. There needs to be films like this.
Yeah.
There needs to be this message. So yeah, this idea is great. This message is great. Even as is, in what I think is sort of like a really not especially interesting and quite flawed film, the message is still necessary. So like, because this is what we have, except for the late 90s film called Mary Jane's Not a Virgin Anymore by our friend and the late Sarah Jacobson.
Well, there's that we haven't watched it yet. That sex education show on Netflix.
We haven't watched
which
that.
I think that's okay. Along these lines. I think there's stuff out there that's positive, but not enough.
Okay. This stuff needs to be out there in the world because, at least in the United States,
yeah,
teenagers are still bombarded with this abstinence nonsense. Mm. And it does no one any good.
Correct.
It's sort of like when the abstinence people were yelling about how Teen Mom on MTV, is that what it was called, that
Teen
show?
Mom, yeah.
Teen Mom on MTV was going to encourage kids to run out and get pregnant, and it made the pregnancy rate go down.
Oh, yeah.
Because kids could see...
What a nightmare.
What a pain that was. Yeah. Real talk about this kind of stuff is really important. And this film does ultimately give you that real talk. But it does so in a very clunky, sort of inert, and again, full of dead air kind of way. I was sympathetic to the character played by Natalia Dyer. I just... Her epiphany near the end feels rushed.
Mm.
Her ability to articulate that epiphany, like on a dime,
yeah,
felt weird.
We just finished doing Love Victor on Breakfast All Day.
Does that do the same thing?
There's a lot of moments where it's like, this is a writer like coming up with the stuff they wish they had said when they were 16,
right?
You know,
and I you know. Fast Times at Ridgemont High kind of hit the nail on the head quite a bit.
Mm.
But that was nearly 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And so, do you have an idea for a film about this sort of thing that you could execute very well? Why don't you go make it as soon as possible? Because it's very important. Yeah, I wanted to like this more.
Yeah.
And... again, would I still want a teenage girl to watch this film? Yep, they should. Absolutely. Because, again, it might not be a good movie, but the information is good.
Certainly.
I have other quibbles about it, but they mostly involve things that characters do, script decisions for characters that I think are... silly or, you know, unhelpful in the long run.
There's a major scene that is an internet anachronism.
There is a major internet anachronism there because it's set in the late 90s, early 2000s. We aren't given a year, but it's, let's call it the year 2000.
Yeah.
Just to split it in half there. And the internet wasn't as advanced.
They get the AOL stuff right, but some things not.
Y'all, streaming porn didn't happen
till later.
Till a little bit later, yeah. So anyway, and there's an element of that in the film. It's the kind of movie that I feel almost bad about saying it's not good because I wanted it to be so much better.
Yes, yeah, it is. It is on paper the kind of movie you want to support. You know, oh, it's
looks,
a, like a sex positive.
It looks bad. It, like, it's not a good looking movie. Yeah. It's just sort of like competently in focus like that.
it is a disappointment. So I already gave mine. Do you have a DVD pick this week?
Space is the place.
Sun Ra?
Yeah.
What, is this a movie or?
Yeah.
Oh, I know the record. I didn't know there was a movie.
Oh, no. The record is the... Yeah. Okay. So anyway.
The record is the soundtrack?
1974. Now, you can get this on Blu-ray and the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
A little expensive.
Hmm.
Because they put it out in this, like, special limited edition.
Gotcha.
But, you know, resourceful people can find it, maybe, in other locations. And, but anyway, Sun Ra, the great late Sun Ra, free jazz mystic, made a movie in 1974 called Space is the Place, where he plays a version of himself presumed missing in 1969. But he's actually been in outer space setting up a colony where he is going to all African-American people for their liberation. He's going to bring them to space where they can have a planet free of trouble. Initially, you see him in, he's a time traveler. So you see him initially in the 1940s playing in a jazz club. And he's meant to be just the house piano player who plays while the dancing ladies do their thing. But he lets rip some free jazz on that piano, and things start exploding. Hats fly off, glasses break, little, like, the bras on the ladies just pop off because he's, like, his free jazz is too incendiary and magical. And so that's what you learn about his past. But in the present, he's been traveling in space. He comes down to Oakland and he tries to recruit kids to work in his outer space employment program. He gets into a scrape with some white NASA dudes who they want to, you know, thwart his plans. This is a brilliant, wonderful, low-budget, trippy experience. High recommendation.
I never...
It's the film that I would recommend more than any other film we have talked about so far in this episode.
I knew the album, and I never knew that there was a movie that went with it. That's fascinating.
It is Le Chef's Kiss.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out. Just a reminder, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/linoleumknife. So much more extra content. Starting at $1 a month, you get more shows, you get online recommendations, you get online hangouts, you get stuff and things and nonsense and all of the stuff. So check it out at patreon.com/linoleumknife. We have letters.
Do we indeed?
Yes.
Pause that thing while I pull them up.
Ay, ay, ay.
Oy, 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 yourself. We got a letter from Ryan. This came back in May. So we're only like 8 weeks late on it. Hey guys, here are my 10 favorite films right now. Ripe for the Knifing. I own up front that I'm a bit of a snob. In no order, The Last Picture Show.
Great.
I cannot tell you how much I love The Last Picture Show. It is... It might be the Texas movie for me. That and Paris, Texas and Dazed and Confused.
Bernie.
But like The Last Picture Show gets me in my gut. And it communicates a sort of sadness that I feel like, and I don't want to be like, you know, exclusionary here, but if you haven't spent any time in West Texas, like living there for a while, you can't feel it exactly that way unless you have.
And I never have, so maybe I'm...
It's so amazing. And you can... watching it, you can feel probably the burden that was placed on Peter Bogdanovich after the fact. Because people are like, holy crap. Right. Like, you know, this is the 400 blows. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And it really is.
Well, it definitely sort of... It's one of the movies you can point to that where you're like, Peter Bogdanovich with Polly Platt? Peter Bogdanovich without Polly Platt?
Well, yeah.
With, you get this and What's Up, Doc? And Paper Moon. And without, you get the rest of his career.
Mishima.
Nice.
Boogie Nights.
I'm not a huge fan, but sure.
I am a fan of Boogie Nights up until the literal bell begins tolling.
That when it segues into becoming the end of Goodfellas?
Yeah.
When it's just an Altman film?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Like, there was a moment in Boogie Nights where on the soundtrack, there is actually a bell tolling.
Yes.
And it's when Mark...
Wahlberg.
E. Mark begins his descent into... you know, degradation.
Yes.
And when I sat in the theater on opening night with Pete and Catherine, or my friends from Dallas, and I looked at both of them and I was like, the bell is tolling. Are we,
We're all hearing this, right?
Were you with us?
I was going to say, didn't I see this
Weren't
with you?
Weren't you with us?
I believe I was.
Okay,
yes.
I remember being with them. I don't remember you being there.
Oh, fine.
Listen, I've been to the movies with you 100,000 times. I can't be expected to remember every moment. Your presence with me in a cinema is almost a given.
Take it as read,
unless
yes.
I intentionally leave you behind. or to go see something that you have no interest in.
As you say, you're not leaving me behind. I am opting not to join you.
Anyway, there was that moment. And that's where I sort of, Boogie Nights lost me.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the final scene where he whips it out. And I'm like, that's that.
Straight man directed this movie.
Pete, at the end of it. Pete goes, well, but you've never seen something like that before. I go, actually, I have. Just FYI.
On the reg.
7 Samurai?
Yeah.
McCabe and Mrs. Miller?
Oh, yes.
The 400 Blows.
There you go.
Yep.
You know that Bogdanovich had made features before Last Picture Show, though.
Wait, what did he make before Last Picture Show?
Targets.
Oh, that's right. I never remember that one.
Yeah.
I always forget about Targets.
Targets. And he'd also done some like Corman stuff, but that was mainly about like re-editing Russian children's films or something.
5 Easy Pieces.
Oh, so good. Have you seen that yet?
Still not yet.
Oh, man. I can't wait for you to see it. It's so good.
Synecdoche, New York. You're making Alonzo just sigh with pleasure.
One of my favorite movies ever. I got to get my hands on Kaufman's new novel.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, come on.
Ryan, you're just
You're trying to woo me now.
You're just sucking up to Alonzo now, Ryan. Days of Heaven.
Oh, gorgeous.
He says, thanks in advance. I noticed that, unfortunately, my list is very straight white male. But regretfully, that's what I am. Keep on rocking, you two.
Regret nothing.
P.S. On a recent episode, Dave bemoaned the state of vegan sausages. Ah, every day of my life. As disappointing as the prosthetic penis at the end of Boogie Nights.
Hashtag vegan sausage.
Yes. And wondered if there was a better brand that he hadn't tried. There is. It's called Beyond Meat. You know what? I tried the Beyond ones. And then,
okay.
It's fine. And the weird smell at the beginning. And then
it goes away when you cook
it. That goes away when you cook it. But it's just, there's not, I don't know.
Yeah.
Moral of the story? I ain't ever satisfied.
Well, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
No one has done for pork what Impossible Meat has done for beef.
True. True.
That's what it comes to.
Make a really salty fake version of
it. That's all I want.
He continues, I'm not a vegan, but my girlfriend of several years is, and she's enlightened me on vegan cuisine. Beyond Meat is in a class of its own. Their sausages put field roast to shame. Well, you know, dust in a tube would put field roast to shame.
Field roast lives in shame.
I have tried all the different field roast versions, and I've been like, maybe this one.
Nope.
Maybe this is the flavor that they get right while they don't get the others right. No.
Mm-mm.
No, I don't like any of them.
No.
Yeah. More important is their ground beef. I'm a lifetime meat eater. I find it virtually undetectable.
You know, the Morningstar Farms breakfast sausage is not terrible.
Not terrible. Yeah, not terrible.
Well, thank you, Ryan.
Linda says, I, too, am a big fan of the Criterion Collection, and many of the movies that I want to see, especially older stuff, have been put out by them. Thank you. Sorry. However, I've encountered one problem. I get most of my DVDs from the library, so they tend to be a little older. It's possible that they have corrected this problem, but I haven't seen it yet. Almost always, DVDs from Criterion do not have closed captions.
They have not fixed that because we just watched the Blu-ray of Now Voyager.
Yeah.
No closed captions.
For people with hearing loss, this is a problem. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
I'm punk rock damaged
from
back in the 1980s. And y'all start doing that mumbly acting, that everyone loves to do so much now? And I'm like, I don't know what you're saying
anymore. We pretty much have the captions on all the time. I unless I want to have it cranked way up, I can't understand the mumblers either. Thankfully, in the case of Now Voyager, everyone is speaking like this.
That is very helpful. This is, as you get older and your ears start falling apart, the mid-Atlantic accent becomes
a lifesaver.
Oh, yes. How do you do?
I said good day.
On the plus side, the ones that are in English, the ones that are not in English, they do have subtitles.
There you go.
Yeah. Look, chalk up one win for the hard of hearing.
I love the Criterion Collection.
Yeah.
I think it would not be a bad idea for people to go to their website and like look for the contact us section or whatever, and very politely, very kindly say, hey, you guys put out great material. I love watching the things you offer. It would be so nice if your physical media included closed captions for the deaf and hard of hearing.
Yeah.
Because certainly the Criterion Channel does. Yeah. Everything you watch on the Criterion Channel has that stuff. Yeah. But yeah, they should be putting it on the discs.
Greg says, I cannot speak to the history of Old Guard as a movie project, but I can say that the reason we got Gina Prince Blythewood directing it now... Gina Prince Blythewood directing it now is because Sony blinked on her Silver and Black, previously scheduled for 2019. Silver and Black would have been Sony's next Marvel movie after Venom, and featured the Spidey-adjacent female anti-heroes Black Cat and Silver Sable.
Yeah.
Old Guard is its own property, but it's also easy to see through lines between it, to see through lines between it and Silver and Black, a.k.a. Spider-Man's bad girl, on-again, off-again girlfriend, who definitely just coincidentally a female cat-themed cat burglar, not at all inspired by Catwoman. Nope.
I did not know about Silver and Black, but that you're right, that you can definitely see the connective tissue between those two projects.
We have a 5-star review.
We do.
And a controversy.
Oh.
Did you see Glenn Weldon's tweet this week or last week?
I did.
Glenn Weldon, who we know and love. Yes. And he's never been on the show.
No.
But we have, hung out with him.
From NPR's Pop Culture Happy
in Los Angeles. And he's delightful and hilarious and fun and a brother homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
And he tweeted that reading your own 5-star reviews on your podcast is not content.
Yeah. Well.
And I thought... And then I thought, wait a minute. Yes, it is. And here's why. It's not about us patting ourselves on the back. It's about giving the people who wrote the review a chance to have their stuff said on the show.
Yeah.
The fact that I demand only 5-star reviews should not get in the way of you being inventive when you write your 5-star review.
Indeed.
Because we're going to read it on the show.
Glenn.
So they're Glenn.
He's great. Read his books.
This is from... Wait. Milwaukee Ryan. Wait a second. Is this Ryan whose email we just read?
It might be. I don't know for sure.
He says, I wrote these guys an email, but they never read it. I'm leaving this here so they know that I know.
I hope it's the same, Ryan. And to everybody,
fine, Ryan.
To everybody who has written us, and it has not been read yet.
We get a lot of emails.
We get a lot of emails. My inbox it gets nuts because we get every time anybody leaves a comment on Patreon, that also winds up in the inbox,
and then
I save those to read them for the other shows that we do for the Patreon.
We try to keep up, but it's hard.
So apologies. Real hard. Apologies if we have not read your letter. Don't take it personally.
We're not a big media empire. Corporation or anything.
Yeah.
It's us at our
kitchen table.
We're a pop and pop operation here.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate you joining us for this hour.
Yep.
Please check out our friends on the internet. Go to Critically Acclaimed, see what Bibbs and Whitney are up to. Heavens. Go listen to my other podcasts, please.
There are so many.
Who Shot Ya on the Maximum Fun Network, Breakfast All Day.
A lot of them.
And over at Bramble Jam, a show that I've been doing with Dan called A Film and a Movie. This week's episode, Dave White joined us to talk about The Wages of Fear and Dunkirk.
When did I do this?
not long ago. It's up now, that episode.
Oh, I thought it already was up and done already.
No, it's currently up now. The new one drops on Wednesday.
Oh. I see. You know what? Here's the thing.
Oh, wait a minute. No, sorry. This episode does drop on Wednesday. It hasn't even gone up yet. I think the one up right now is still the 1917...
But y'all just recorded with Ruby.
Yes, we record a week in advance.
Oh, you're on a professional podcast network. Yes. I see. I don't know how those things
work. We're ahead
work.
Of the game. Yeah. So yeah, tune in this week to A Film and a Movie. Dave White will join us to talk about The Wages of Fear and Dunkirk. It's a lovely conversation.
Sure.
Also, on the our internet friends tip, check out The Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, Fat Guys of the Movies, Big Fat Gay Podcast, Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review there like Ryan did, and we'll read it on the air, whatever Glenn Weldon has to say about that. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Stitcher Radio and Google Play, CastBox, Podbean, etc. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. Keep up with him over on Twitter at Bluetopia, BLEUTOPIA. And drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We do love hearing from you, and we do try to read letters on the air. Yeah, that's it. So anyway, have a good week, you guys. Take care of yourselves and each other. And until next time.
Goodbye.